Up next, it's Ric Flair and his new band.
Oh my God, I'm back again. On Betfair Casino, everybody spin. Gonna bring new games, gonna show you now. New game party. Find new games.
Dropping hits every week. Find the new slots.
On Betfair Casino tonight.
18 plus, BeGambleAware.org.
Who cares if it's basic? You deserve that little green drink with the cream. So go on. Get the new Vanilla Matcha Frappe from our all-new McCafe Summer Drinks range. Now at McDonald's. Available until the 13th of July. Price and participation may vary. Frappes not available on delivery. Subject to availability.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Storm.
Cloaked in secrecy, they show up without warning. State their business, then vanish as quickly as they appear.
Are you ready for the sex girls?
Not that I believe in it, but I could see that. But these guys are dumb.
Freaking nerds.
The Boogie Monster. Podcasting the unknown.
Salt and pepper guy? Salt and pepper?
I mean, how could you not be in the late 90s or late 80s, early 90s?
Good answer.
Yeah, it was everywhere, man.
Real good
answer. Did they do What a Man, What a Man, What a Mighty Good Man?
I believe that was in Vogue. That was in Vogue also.
I got in Vogue and Salt and Pepper confused often.
In Vogue was, I can't off the top of my head, but that was the one like that bridged. That bridged the gap for like the heavy metal and punk rock kids. You'd be like, ah, in Vogue. All right. It's a school dance.
Yeah.
And I want to get down. So I hope those ladies are doing well.
Yeah, I do too. They were some nice ladies.
In Vogue. There were some nice ladies.
There were some nice young ladies.
Formed in 1989. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I was into both of those. But yeah, like I said, I did get them often confused. But I guess In Vogue didn't really rap.
No, they were R&B. Yeah, Salt and Pepper with DJ Spinderella.
What was their big? They had a couple of big hits.
Ladies, what's my Shoop? Weakness?
Who did
Man?
Yeah.
I'm on the Wikipedia right now and go over these hits. They had hits, baby.
Yeah, they did.
Hit, baby. What a Man. Was with En Vogue. All right. You were right.
Oh, that was Salt and Pepper with
Salt and
En
Pepper
Vogue?
With En Vogue. All right. They'd push it. They'd, okay. Let's talk about sex,
push
baby.
It.
None of Your Business. Don't know that one. Champagne. Don't know that one.
Oh, yeah. Something. I know None of Your Business. If something, something. None of your business. Something. None of your business. That was the hook.
I think we could put this behind a paywall and make a few bucks if it's just me and you doing Salt and Pepper. What an appropriate. What's Dave's karaoke go to? Anything about seasoning.
Oh, my God.
That's it. That's the only Patreon is just us doing karaoke.
I got that new Smoke Paprika album. It's pretty good.
I think Paprika has had to have been a music name at some point.
That's a good name. Paprika.
You know
who else I was really into at that time, that early 90s R&B hip-hop stuff, was Naughty by Nature. Boy, that was a phenomenon.
Not that they. I have the 90s channel on the Sirius XM, and you hit me. Little OPP or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's staying on.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like, I don't get it, so it's bad. The current kind of like high-end, not high-end, but like sonically, like hip-hop with, I don't even know what.
Drum machines. And
well, it was always.
The mumble rap.
Yeah, it's not my thing, you know?
Yeah.
But,
I don't get it.
Man, the old hard hitting shit. He puts a. Oh God! I mean, I don't know a lot of. I still own like the popular stuff, but like Cypress Hill,
little Onyx, Black Sheep.
Da 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 da. Da.
You can get with this, boys, or you can boys. Get with that.
Little DOS. Mm-hmm. How about some DOS Effects?
DOS Effects, is that the All I Want to Do Is a Zoom Zoom
no.
Zoom and a Boom Boom? No, that's not them.
That's
Who was DOS Effects? I remember the name. I can't remember their song.
They sang a song. It was all candy. But it didn't know it later. I remember one specific part. They want effects. They want effects. DOS effects. They want effects. That was one. Man. All right. It's an all hip-hop episode of the Boogie Monster.
I was all into that. That was pre-rock and roll, Dave. I went from, I think we talked about this, but I went from like 80s mainstream country in the backseat of my parents' car my whole childhood to once I got into middle school, then all my friends started listening to rap, and I was like, oh, what's all this? What's this good stuff?
Was your,
that was before I got into rock or metal or anything.
Was your middle school, was it pretty integrated?
Yeah, yeah, which was a big change from my elementary school. I moved about an hour north between elementary school and middle school, and elementary school was probably 99.5% white. We may have had a couple of Latinos or Asian kids, but almost no
some
black
non-denominational
kids.
Browns.
Yeah. And then middle school, it was probably, we had quite a range of diversity. We had a lot of Asian kids, a lot of black kids, a lot of Latinos. So, yeah, it was just, it opened up so many new doors as far as, like, things you could be into as a dumb little white kid. Nobody was listening to hip-hop in elementary school for whatever reason.
Was there racial tension in school?
Not really. I don't remember any. I mean,
my schools were so always white all the way through and through, and there was still, like, anti-Latino vibes. Because we had, but if there anything, I mean, it was white and it was Latino and Indian, and
yeah,
some Filipino, but no black people. I think we had like two black people in my high school.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, I don't remember any racial tension. I mean, there was the occasional, like the people on the fringes, like the real, you know, we had a few racist rednecks, you know, that would cause trouble every now and then with, you know, with somebody, but there wasn't like ongoing tension. It was an eye-opening thing. I don't know if I told you this story when I was just incredibly yet inadvertently racist to my buddy Jermaine Foster. I was friends with these two black twins, these brothers, Jamie and Jermaine, and they were just really cool kids. Mm-hmm. And I played basketball with them. But like I said, no experience hanging out with black kids in elementary school. And now I'm in middle school, and I got all these black friends. And it's just the environment I was raised in. Mm-hmm. Like, this could open up so many cans of worms. But I was not raised in a racist environment, at least in my family. But just the area, the town I grew up in, there was just this, what I call, like, passive racism. Like, nobody in my family or people I grew up with really, looking back on it, wished any harm to any minorities, but there was just this kind of ever-present vibe of like this passive white supremacy. Like, yeah, well, you know, kind of like, well, you know, you better not bring home any black girls, kind of joking, but kind of not kind of thing, you know? Well, anyway, growing up in that environment, it was like no one taught me this. It was just assumed that it would be kind of self-regulated segregation, you know, meaning you don't date outside your race. Again,
a,
none of this was
separate but equal kind
me.
Of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not verbally taught to me, but it was just in the air my whole childhood. So anyway, long story short, one day I'm sitting there with my buddy Jermaine Foster, and this gal, I forgot, just one of these little popular cheerleader gals walked by, and he made kind of a, it wasn't like a derogatory comment, but just like, oh, there goes Anna. Boy, she sure is pretty. And I just innocently said, like, yeah, she sure is. It's a shame you could never date her. And he goes, what? I was like, yeah, it just sucks that, you know, like, y'all be a cute couple. It'd be cool if y'all dated, but it's a shame you can't. And he's like, why can't I? And I was like, well, you know, because, and he's like, no, I don't know. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. You can't. Like, I knew it wasn't like a law, but I just thought it was like an unwritten rule where, like, hey, sorry, I can't date a black girl.
Oh,
you can't date a white girl.
Your family didn't tell you that's not allowed? Because my family sure told me. Also, what Disney grade school, boy, she sure is pretty. Those were the words.
I was trying to make Jermaine seem good. I don't think he was like being a creep. It was just like, oh, there goes Anna. Boy, she sure is cute. you know, and or he may even said something like, I think I'm going to ask her out or something. And I was just like, yeah, too bad. That's never going to work. And he was like, it like forced me to like,
societal regulations.
Yeah, I'm just kind of a passive racist. Holy shit.
Listen, you can't date white women. I can't jump. These are the laws. These are the laws and the rules we abide by.
And boy, I felt like a turd. And I was like, oh, yeah, well, I guess, you know, we can do whatever we want. But
I had a very small warehouse. It was just me and another guy working in it. Well, it was two of us, three of us. And shout out Derek Jackson. It was a real open, like, where we got to be buddies enough to where I just didn't know anything about black people. And he just let this white suburban boy ask any questions without judgment. And I'm so appreciative of, like, because it's, I remember one thing, I was like, I would say, I did not realize the racist connotations of calling somebody boy.
Ooh.
I had no idea. I just thought it was like a kind of like, what's up, boy? What you doing over there, boy? Had zero idea of that. And I was saying that, and he's like, oh, it's like that. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, all the credit in the world to him going like, oh, you don't know. And he's like, yeah, it's kind of like a racist. Like, that's like a sub. I'm like, I am so sorry. That is not what I meant by that. I just thought it was just a yeehaw kind of, what you doing there, boy? Kind of that. Yeah. And so he was very forgiving with that. And we had a dialogue. If I had any questions, I'm like, well, why, you know, why is there a stereotype about watermelon? He's like, I don't know. I don't even like it. I'm like, all right. So that bug. And we just got to have conversations like that. And it was such a fun working relationship. We were also both fucking off like the whole time. Mm-hmm. There and where we'd, you know, stuff would get, I think he was trying very hard to stay on the straight and narrow. I think he had maybe had like a rough child. He was like in his 30s, late 30s. And I was 19 maybe or something. Mm-hmm. And I think he like try to get his life on the straight and narrow. He's working a job. He's got a wife and I think some stepkids. He's not trying to screw around. But November Rain would come on the radio, and he'd be like, "I love this song." I'm like, you can't. He's like, "Shut up, man! Don't even interrupt me while the song's on." And he would have to go in the other room and listen to November Rain.
Like, that's so funny.
All right. And then we would just have foot races around the building. We would just challenge each other. we fucked off so much. And then we work with a guy. One of the guys, he was on work release, so he'd come in, but he'd have to leave right at 5. We kept trying to make him late for prison. Oh. We'd be like, come on, just come.
What job was this, by the way?
It was in Addison. It was at like they manufactured clamshell containers. Or they didn't even make them. They distributed them. So it's just like a small distribution warehouse where you know, there'd be salespeople in the front. They'd get orders. We have all these. It was like for a cell phone, like when cell phones were new and there was all these different accessories. They sold the clamshells. So we'd get them delivered and then distribute them to people who shops that would order them. And also there's a side business of aftermarket, like shitty plastic aftermarket Corvette parts that the owner's brother was doing. It was a weird thing. But we screwed around. But I to credit to him for letting me make some mistakes, clearly out of ignorance, not out of hate, and having the patience to set me on the right path.
Yeah, I still find myself doing that sometimes with some of my black friends where I'll ask a question and I'm like, they probably don't want to answer. Dulce Sloan, funny comedian, has a great joke. I'm not going to quote it.
Dulce.
But it's a terrific joke about this same topic. And basically, the punchline is, you know, the punchline is based around the word Wikipedia. I'm not Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That kills me every time I hear it. Like, which is such a, it's funny, but it's also so true. Like, hey, I'm not a search engine for all your stupid white questions.
No, I fucked that up too with a ways back with a trans friend where I was asking the questions and it was like, you know, I'm not here to educate. If you want knowledge that the internet's out there, you don't. Mm-hmm. just because a person is that thing, it doesn't make them the representative and the distributor sure. of knowledge about that situation. Yeah, that's what, fuck, I forgot again. I remembered what I want. Oh, what I wanted to talk about, which has nothing to do with any of this, but if you'll indulge sure. me. I was thinking, do you think, you know, I'm having this pivot lately, which is it's a good one, but I'll you know, I wake up, I look at my phone, and I'm like, oh, I don't need any of this. I don't care. Like videos start where I'm like, oh, what's happening with these two people arguing at a gas?
Do you look up? You look at your phone as soon as you wake up, like within a few minutes.
Yeah, and it's a terrible habit. But
mm-hmm.
I was thinking about like how many people are. I think it was that doofus Jake Lang or somebody. Just people being loud about stuff because they're like. Mm-hmm. Where are any of these people? Nobody would be like this without social media.
Sure.
So much. It's so performative. And I'm not stating anything groundbreaking. Everything's so performative because of social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself finally like using less and less. Of like I don't really participate much anymore with anything personal. It's all promotional stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe a cat picture, a bike video, or something. But then, pulling away from it and just feeling more at ease with even stuff that doesn't have to do with social media, where I'm a little bit more relaxed. I don't know. It's like it. All these people face to face are not these people online. This is not a revelation.
Sure.
But then if you stop paying attention to that stuff, I'm not saying the problems go away. I'm not going to be ignorant mm-hmm. about that. Like, oh, the problems don't exist if you don't read about them. That's not true. But the dickheads that take up all the attention, these Jake Langs and all of these fucking, you know, people riling up from all over the place. Like, okay, the issues are still the issues. Government's fucked in this and that, but not letting all these representatives, just these loudmouths on social media, amplify how I feel about it.
Sure.
I don't know where I was going with this.
No, I get it.
I think it was trying and just I think I finally got sick of being an online guy.
And oh, I'm like, sure.
Putting it and just maybe it's kicking into summer hours here, but. The quest for inner peace, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know.
Well, I feel like that's probably step one is getting offline as much as possible, and it's specifically social media.
Listen to the Grateful Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Chilling out.
How's that going, by the way?
It's good. Well, shout out. I was in Pittsburgh. My opener, Noah Snyder, Big Deadhead, made me a list as well. A lot of overlap nice. With your list.
Okay.
Cool. I'm taking it. A lot of. He threw some MJ Lenderman on there. I know that's people like that
fan.
Guy. Yeah, that stuff's
he's
good.
Great.
Kind of like a lot of the Jerry Garcia solo stuff, if I
yeah.
may be so bold.
Absolutely. Boy, I love hearing this from you,
Kyle. I'm working on a plan for 2027 for comedy, and I might just flip the script on how I've been doing things for 25 years.
What do you mean?
Well, at the risk of saying something that I don't know if I could pull it off yet. I would like to pull it off. And I would also like the opinion. I want to do all independent venues and do
awesome.
And do a pay what you can.
Oh,
ticketing.
Look at you. Little Fugazi action.
Yeah, well, I mean, everything's fucked. Everything's too much money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm in a position where I can at least, I mean, and what's the last thing you have money to spend on? Entertainment.
Yeah.
And comedy's treated me well enough that I can, I think, afford to take this chance.
That's awesome.
And instead of doing a new special, I might, and I want to know. Honestly, I would like to hear the criticisms. Like, praise is one thing, but criticisms help me redirect. I've been taping all these sets. I got, I don't know how many hours of footage, you know, from weekends of shows. It's you know what shows are. There are a lot of repeats in there.
Sure.
I'm just going to dump it all on YouTube. All of it. So, you know what? That you like Grateful Dead? Here, oh, man, this is Pittsburgh, second show, May 30th. Oh, man, that one's got this bit. It's different than the way this bit goes. And I'm not expecting everybody to listen to all of it or anything, but just... You know what? Somebody else can compile a special out of all the stuff. Here's the best. This is the best version of this joke is on this recording.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's a little up my own ass, but it's also I don't want to. In 2027, I'll tour on new material that's not in that stuff. But here's everything from the last 3 years since Dirt Nap. Here's hours and hours of shit. Put it on in the background. Just put it on. That's how people listen to stuff, unless I'm wrong. Nobody's sitting there dedicated with a dedicated hour to watch comedy. They're putting it on and doing other stuff because you don't have to watch it.
This is where I would disagree with you, though.
Okay, and please. No, I want to hear it.
We have a call. Actually, let's take a call. This caller has an opinion on that.
Oh, okay.
And I have an opinion on that as well.
Okay, so, I'm leery about announcing it before if I can figure out if I can pull it off or not.
No, I think the independent venue and pay what you want part is great, but
all right.
We talked about this a few months ago about the same thing about you no longer wanting to do specials. So anyway, we'll handle the call, and then I'll give you my commentary.
All right.
323-364-1541, in that order. That is our phone number. Call, text, whatever you want to do. But, yeah, here we go.
Hey, guys. Sorry, this is going to be kind of a long one. This is Audra from Port Angeles, Washington. Catching up on the new stuff because I didn't know you were back. And I just heard Kyle say he doesn't want to do full hours anymore. And, man, I hope that's not true. Just a little backstory about me and your comedy. When I came out as trans, basically everybody that I know for the most part, including two of my kids, totally disowned me. And life was really hard. And one of the only things that got me that or that helped get me through it was watching your specials, man. You know, just knowing that you know, other people felt lonely, other people felt this existential dread, but they could turn it on its head and make something great out of it. It's a thing that brings joy to other people. So, you know, I know shit gets bad and it gets you down from time to time, but fuck, man, you know, it may not seem like a big thing to you, but it's big to some people. And and you're amazing. And also, Dave, love your fucking recipes. Love your stand-up. Got the colored double vinyl. You guys keep it up, all
right? Right on. So
those are very kind words. Thank you.
Very kind words. Here's the thing. I get everything you're saying about the modern state of stand-up and show business and, you know, short attention spans and clips and TikToks and all that. I get what you're saying as far as your strategy to kind of combat that. However, someone like yourself, you've been doing comedy what now, about 20 years? As far as like being a working comic? A long time.
Probably 16 or 17.
16, you know. You already have such an impressive body of work. What do you got, six or seven specials or / albums out? It's a lot. Well, my point is, and I love the do my own thing, DIY, indie, I love all that. But with that, you could come kind of, what am I trying to say? I'm saying, I don't think you would disagree, but I don't think you need to adapt to the current state of climate and social media. You've already put out 6, 7, 8 incredible specials. Why not just add to that total and work on your legacy, your cumulative body of work?
Well,
when you're dead and gone, people are going to be listening to your albums and watching your specials. They may not remember all the stuff that got chopped up and thrown on, sucked up by TikTok, and then never saw a full cohesive release as a special.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, just here's hour-long sets. Like, I'll fucking send it at the live show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not dicking around. If I'm charging people to come see the hour, it's there. Mm-hmm. Here's so many versions of it. Like, instead of like, all right, I got all the cameras set up. Here's the... I hope I get what I want out of these two tapings I'm doing for this special. Mm-hmm. Here's hours and hours and hours of live shows.
And how are you going to release them again? Are these YouTube videos? Or are they?
I don't know yet. This is just like I'm collecting opinions.
I just think I'm going to put them up. I think it's a disservice to your legacy as an artist, as a comedian, to because you know, I mean,
why not?
Not to suck your back too hard, but we know that anything new that Kyle releases as a special that he cares enough about to put out in the world, we know it's going to be good.
Okay.
But the thought of a full hour just kind of getting lost in the ether of social media and clips and blah, blah, blah. Like, maybe do your approach and then a couple years later release the whole thing together as a special or as an album on vinyl. But just the thought of, like, a full Canaan hour just kind of, like, being real prevalent for the next month or two and then just kind of disappearing and there's no actual full-length version that we could return to and enjoy.
I mean, thank you, but with respect, you can return to any of them. Here's the four sets from Pittsburgh. Here's mm-hmm. five sets from Sacramento. Here, it's all there. It is free.
Okay. If it's in a format that's easily accessible.
Yeah.
Not
no. Just
chopped.
I'm talking
about just taking an hour worth of material and turning it into 60 or 75 little clips.
No. I'm talking about I've recorded full hour shows.
Mm-hmm.
All on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. Here's, okay. Here's every headlining set from Sacramento. Here's five headlining sets. Mm-hmm. You can see what's different between this one and that one.
Is there enough difference to make that work?
I don't. I suggested this same
approach to Rory Scovel 10 years ago because he is so improv heavy.
Yeah.
He's literally making shit up tonight that he might never do again.
Yeah, and I'm
not. You're a little more structured.
I'm not, but also I don't. That's for whoever to determine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and if you'll see how a live show is fun and how it like oh but I'm not, it's not with the intent of like oh will this make me more successful, will this sell more tickets. It's just here's everything I got. Go and please take it, remix it, take a clip mm-hmm. out of it and put it out there. I'm moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's forward movement for me. Here's a ton of shit. There's probably jokes I don't even remember doing in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the set sound like from 3 years ago versus now? Oh, it's a whole different set.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not picking and choosing for some hour with a bunch of cameras and getting my face powdered and all this bullshit. No, here's all the stuff. Here's all the comedy. And I will keep, I'm moving forward. I'm onward.
Okay. Well, yeah. In your defense, this is a little different than the first approach a few months ago where, like, oh, I'm not going to release a special, just do it all clips. I think I'm still hung up on the concept of just all, seeing a whole nice hour just kind of.
No. Watch the whole
mechanically
hour.
Mechanically separated into little bits.
No, watch the whole hour in full. Like, when Trampoline in a Ditch came out, that was just like, oh, we were running video on this. May as well put the video out. That was supposed to be audio only.
Yeah.
But they were running it, so here's a single shot, static. Mm-hmm. This is what the live show was like. So, yeah, I'm just gonna, that's what I'm thinking about doing right now.
Okay.
Just to flush out all, instead of like, oh, this story, but then this story. It's all out there somewhere. You know, and I'm just I don't know how it would affect me negatively is what I'm trying to figure out. It might not do anything for me,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know. I don't think it can affect me negatively.
No, I don't. Especially at this point, like, you know,
No, here's a bunch of shit. Just pick one. Play it in the background, like how most people listen to comedy.
Yeah, I don't know about that though. Like, listen to it. You don't want, and I'm not trying. I'm not saying. I don't know. I feel weird that I'm sucking your dick too hard, but like,
I don't.
There are some comics that are conducive to background. You are not one of them. You have original, interesting, funny shit. It shouldn't just be some background music.
But then, okay, then here, this particular show really captured it. Share that one with your friends.
Sure.
But I'm not dwelling on that. I'm moving forward. Thank you for the nice words, Dave. But yeah, I feel like I'll keep writing stuff. I'm moving forward, you know. So here's, yeah, it's not maybe, oh, this weekend, look how it's not so different from show to show, or look how this order changed and how this linked with that later on, or I'll change up the closers on weekends.
No, that is interesting. Even touring with you, seeing like a joke evolve over the course of a week or two, like, oh, when he did that the first night and now he's added so much, like, that is interesting to see the evolution of a joke, the evolution of a set.
And I'm not expecting people to, like, listen to all of it like a super fan type of thing. That's not – I'm not up my own ass that much. I'm just saying, here's all of it. I'm done worrying about it. Put it into the world. Mm-hmm. Let it take on whatever shape it needs to take. You know, chop it up. Take clips. Go put them – I don't care. I mean, obviously – well – because how many comedians do you see, like, oh, you could tell they make their money from monetizing being online.
Sure.
And so, and it's not a bad thing. Everybody's got to make a living. But some people, you know, how can you make more money outside of touring? Oh, I you know, that's why podcasts have to be video, because you monetize that. Do we even make money from this?
Yeah, now, yeah, we make money. Not a
really?
Ton.
How are we making money now?
Yeah, make a little bit of money.
We don't have ads.
Yeah, they put in. They put in.
Somebody's put in ads. Okay, yeah, I didn't realize. Yeah, we have ads. So we're
not
making
we're not doing live reads. But
no,
yeah.
We're buying. You get a Chipotle's worth of money every quarter. if you want to make money, you have to monetize all this online stuff. You have to make it slick, make a YouTube series, make sketches, make sure it's good video for your podcast. Do, you know, all content creation. This goes into what I was saying about not wanting to be online much anymore. I don't give a fuck about it. I want to do live shows in cool venues, and that's what I've gotten to do, and it's put me in this place to where I can take a chance and go, all right, all indie venues, pay what you will. Here's my catalog of the last 3 or 4 years. If you want to root around in there, go for it. It's not a money grab. So.
Well, of course not.
Well, that's why. So, like, a special where you got to spend money and you got to worry about making money back on it so you could pay for the special. They're like, I don't want it. That's also part of the frustration. Like, I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to do the model that we're all expected to do. Because, and it's not like I'm standing up against anybody. It's not like I said no to Netflix or HBO. That's not what's going on. I'm not interested in doing it the way it's supposed to be. The conventional way right now.
Yeah.
So I'm trying.
Well, I feel the same way.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to see how it could affect me negatively. It might affect me not positively, but will it affect me negatively?
My strategy is just to do less of everything.
Yeah, man. Just.
I mean, I'm so.
Dial it back.
You know, it's funny. I was just watching a clip of Sam Talent yesterday on some podcast interview, and he was just talking about a similar thing where he's like, as much as I love stand-up, I think his point was he's anxious to kind of take a break from stand-up and just be a full-time writer, novelist, author.
Yeah.
Just because, and his point was like, and see, I've never had to deal with this. I've never had an agent breathing down my neck about ticket sales. But he's like, no matter where I go, You know, it's like, oh, the Friday late show, you gotta move some tickets. And he's like, well, nobody care that I already sold 400 for the early show. Yeah. We still got tickets available for the late show. Just the constant, and I feel like you deal with this quite a bit, the constant conveyor belt of promotion just to satisfy agents and club owners as far as ticket sales. Like, that whole part that got to me years ago. It's like, oh, just the constant. And I know it's part of it, I guess. It's a necessary evil, but just the constant self-promotion. And it's some of it is based on ego, and then some of it is based on career and bottom lines as far as like, we still got tickets available. I got to sell these fucking tickets. Like, I could see how that just wears you down after a while.
Well, and that is also Sam's, you know, a phenomenal writer, so he's got a reason to...
Yeah, he's got something to pivot to.
Yeah, and I that's part of also like pay what you can.
Mm-hmm.
Take a chance on the show then if you weren't sure if you wanted. I mean, yeah, $60 for comedy shows too much. You don't have to pay anything. Hopefully other people might pay above and beyond. I mean, I have to work out if that's feasible because then that means I have to cover the nut at these venues.
I was about to say, how do you talk the venue into this deal you cover it?
Yeah, I'm like, what's the fee? What's your overhead that I have to cover, hopefully? And that's where it might bite me in the ass. You know, if everybody doesn't pay anything, comes with a free show. I'm like, okay, this isn't working the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
But maybe the venue, maybe these independent venues would be willing to do that too because, you know, it's getting people in the doors for these places that are struggling also.
Selling drinks.
Yeah, I mean, it's also to help out, you know, I've was working with National Independent Venue Association and just all the Ticketmaster Live Nation shit, none of that for the year. I'm not saying I'll never do it again, but for 2027, no Live Nation venues or anything where I've like, oh yeah, these are money grab places and I just want to help. I mean, I've been cooking with this idea for a minute, but I had it at Bottle Rocket in Pittsburgh this past weekend, which is phenomenal.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, phenomenal independent venue. And like, yeah, just places like that. And I mean, I want to see if I can do that. I would like to not lose money, but if I broke even for the year, that'd be pretty tight.
Dude, I think you could do exactly what you're talking about and not and do better than breaking even. Dude, you're at the point where you literally can do just about anything you want with your career.
Well, but also, everybody doing jokes about how everything's more expensive. Well, I'm doing fine. You know, I'm not a stadium comic, quite obviously, but I can take a chance. Mm-hmm. And so I'm already talking about this too much without having things in place. And now, if like I don't pull it off, I'm like, oh fuck, what happened? I got to answer for that. So I'm a little. This is the idea that I would like to pursue for next year.
Good for you, buddy. I like it.
We'll see. We'll see if it works.
I think I'm just a little selfish because I need to add to my Canaan discography, which, speaking of which, your recent stuff, vinyl but release, whenever you
I, man, to. Somebody else bootleg it and put it out on vinyl. Somebody else go through the effort. I never want to. There's always somebody like, records are cool. We'll make records for you. I'm like, all right, make the records. I don't know.
Your stuff is sought after online, by the way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I've seen Canaan Records going for $200.
Did they get $200?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's the question. You could charge anything you want for anything in the world. It's only worth that if somebody pays it.
Well, I think that's a good idea, buddy. I just don't want to see, you know, hours just disappear into the ether. But you know. Do your thing. I think that that approach could be beneficial.
Yeah, that's
good for you, man.
Things are shitty. I don't have to add to the shittiness. I could try and make it a little bit better.
Good for you, buddy. Hey, let's take another call.
Let's do that.
323-364-1541. Give us a call.
Changes in sexual performance are more common than most people realize, and support doesn't need to feel awkward. With MedExpress, everything happens privately online. Start by completing a short consultation reviewed by UK-registered clinicians. If eligible, treatment is delivered discreetly to your home with ongoing support whenever you need it. You're not alone in this. Visit medexpress.co.uk/podcast to learn more.
Hey guys, first time, long time. Been listening for a bit, and I just want to ask, because I know you guys are kind of protective of comedy. Is there anything that you guys think is funny that you can't find anybody else who thinks is funny? I became a big fan of this guy who did kind of like a guy with a guitar comedian, but he does a song about having a baboon heart transplant when he's a kid, and his girlfriend breaks up with him, and how she's not breaking his heart, he's breaking a baboon's heart, and it's, to me, it's the funniest shit I've ever heard in my life. And every time I play it for somebody, they just look at me, or they just stare off, and I stare at them, waiting the whole time for them to laugh. And there's another one about him wanting to play with some of these Asian babies, and I played it for somebody with Asian babies, and they just didn't seem to get it. I was just wondering if it's just me, or just like, does that hit you guys personally, where you're like, why do you not think this is funny? Anyway, love the show. Hope you guys keep it up. Good to see you guys coming back. All right, bye.
My man's talking about our buddy Mike O'Connell.
Mike O'Connell started comedy with him in Chicago. He's got a great song about how he's going to get his... Oh, you got it?
Oh, that kills me. I love that song.
Now, you have to imagine hearing that for the first time live in front of maybe 15 people in a bar in Chicago. God, I just saw him in, I think it was DTF St. Louis I was watching.
Was he in that? I like that show.
A brief moment as a police officer, like in the station, like maybe 30 seconds.
Really? Good for him.
That is Mike O'Connell. He kind of blew up with, who's the Asian guy from the Hangover movies?
Ken Jeong.
Yeah, he did a song with him back in the alt comedy blow up days that kind of got him on the map. And Mike's awesome. He's got a great song about how his girlfriend broke up with him, but he's going to get her back because he stole her insulin. And so she literally can't live without him. he also wrote and starred in a movie called The Living Wake with a early Jesse Eisenberg, if you could find that movie out there. Yeah, Mike O'Connell's phenomenal as far as stuff that I think is funny. I was hanging out with you hang out with other comics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think the whole Shane Gillis thing got overblown. I don't know if we talked about this. It's like, oh, he's racist against Asians. And like any comedian could clearly be like, no, he's doing the what if I was this guy character, which mm-hmm. is what comedians sure. do to each other all the time. And they say the most mm-hmm. foul stuff. It's like your
context is important.
It's like your family. It's like you making jokes to a family member. You want to make the worst joke that you hope nobody hears because you know it's over the top. I'm not saying it's mm-hmm. right. I'm just saying this is what is happening.
And shock value. Yeah.
Shock value for the not because it's strangers, but because it's the people mm-hmm. closest to you, and it's funny to freak out your friends. And it's mm-hmm. when comedians start thinking like, you know, you could start toeing the line about, can I do this in front of a crowd? Does a crowd trust me? And it's where new comedians don't realize, like, you have not built up, you have not earned this trust.
You have no credit.
You haven't earned the rapport where people trust you, and you think, like, oh, but it's a character. Nobody knows you.
Nobody knows that. You're opening with a pussy-eating joke. Like,
yeah.
Give us some context on how to follow this.
Yeah, nobody knows why they should like you or trust you. But so, yeah, just last night, I sent some horrible things to Shane Brendan. Because I knew it was horrible, and he knows it's horrible. We know it's horrible, and that's why we laugh, because it's horrible. So yeah, and I will not repeat it here. It's probably real racist.
Do you have anything like what he asked? Like is something that you find funny that you showed people, and they're like, "I don't get it."
I mean, me and a couple buddies have a pretty solid fart web. clip sharing text thread. Where it's just,
what do you mean? Fart web.
Just fart. Just fart videos.
Just videos.
And yeah, and there's some people that like, oh, I'll never find that funny. And then there's sure. people who can fart, and I'm like, I don't like you enough to where I think it's yeah. funny that you're doing it. But then exactly. there's people who are like, oh, but I also will say like, no, this is the funniest thing in the world to me most of the time. Ladies don't appreciate it. And this is a double standard. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would like it if a lady found farts funny.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, small doses, literally and figuratively.
You know? I don't know if I would be about it. And I also wouldn't, you know, my last relationship where it's like, oh, I'm farting right now, dude. She didn't appreciate it.
I don't give a shit. He'll fart right now.
I'm looking fart. You said fart? I'll fart.
I'll fart whenever.
I got reaction. I got reaction to the word. Where, oh, she didn't like it? Okay, fine. I'm not gonna do that for me and know that it mm-hmm. upsets you.
Sure.
I mean, there is always I just got to see what's going on in this other room. I removed myself from the situation, but then to get yelled at.
You have one of the best inside fart jokes that I've encountered.
I do.
And you have got me multiple times with it, where we'll either be driving, or I think you've done it when we were hiking, but you'll stop and you go, wait. What's that? You hear that?
I mean,
and I take you seriously, and I'm like, what? And then,
come on,
like, damn it, you fucker, you got me.
Come on, man.
But you sell it well. You're a good actor. You sell. There's a couple times where I'm like, what? One time we were hiking, I thought maybe you heard a mountain lion or something. I got scared for a second.
Oh yeah, you got to act. You got to sell it. That's what makes it better. That? Is the salesmanship of it. Making it a punchline. The setup is the words. Punchline is the fart.
Alabama barking spiders.
Yeah. Get you. Got some ducks under the table.
One of the hardest times I've ever laughed, and I've shown this to a few people, and a couple friends have mm-hmm. got it and laughed at my level, but there's been several people I've showed it, they just didn't get it. The hardest I think I've ever laughed from watching something on TV was Galifianakis' special Live at the Purple Onion. And his stand-up and his jokes are fine enough, but it's the little segments that he did with Brian Unger, who used to be on The Daily Show. And he's, it's Zach playing his own twin brother, Seth. He's doing the Seth Galifianakis character.
Yeah.
And he's telling some story about Zach doing drugs or something, but he's a little hesitant to share this story, so he asked the host if he can disguise his voice like they did, like the robot voice or the monster voice, and the guy's like, sure, we can do that. And he just tells this story, and I'm not going to tell the whole story, but just his still having that southern accent come through the digitization or however they do the monster voice or the robot voice, as he says. But the way it starts, he goes, so I'm in the basement, and Mama's like, where's Zach? No. Yeah, I fucked up. He goes, Mama's like, where's Zach? And I'm like, he's in the basement. And she's like, well, go get him. But just the adding the ums and the likes through that filter. Oh, my God. He's just talking about, he's sitting there with like a, like he's making like homemade ecstasy with Tide with bleach, and I'm like, "What's ecstasy?" And he's like, "Ecstasy makes me a better dancer." Like just hearing that southern accent still shine through the filter, the audio filter, like that. Just I almost shit my pants. I was laughing so hard, and I've shown people, and they're like, "Okay, he's doing the monster." What? I'm like, dude, you don't get it.
There's okay. How do I? the Wheeler Walker Jr. stuff. right there. Wheeler Walker Jr. stuff. Holy shit!
Holy shit is right.
I almost drove off the road listening to that. Here's the, like, so over the top, racist, stupid. And the Ben Show sketch, the locker room.
Yeah. Yes. What was the name of that show? Oh, the locker room. Yes, where he's talking to the football players.
Because that's him. That's Wheeler Walker Jr. But what's his?
What was the name of that show?
Ben Hoffman. It's called the Ben Show. His name's Ben Hoffman.
Yeah. It was so funny. So many funny sketches.
And it's the dumbest, most over the top, racist, kind of in like almost not quite Blazing Saddle style comedy, but like we know we're laughing at this because it's preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's saying every stereotype. I'm going to play it, but. But that it's so over the top, ridiculous. Like, yeah, I know this is comedy. And this is where it's hard to explain. It's hard to articulate to comics. Like, you know, well, they said it. Yeah, but you're not them. I hate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't know why you can say it. You can say whatever you want, but it's not going to be funny coming from you. That's just talent, charm, likability, which is why two people could say the same thing and one person it sounds horrible and the other person it's funny. And that's subjective. Dave Attell can get away with whatever he wants because for some reason I think we know Dave Attell is the greatest and a good guy and he said so much stuff over the top that there's no way you can believe in all of it. You know, sure. He's just optimized comedy. And there's other people that say it. I'm like, I don't know. I get a vibe that you are a bad person and you believe this. I don't like you. And therefore, I'm not going to laugh at mean comedy.
Mm-hmm. You see that a lot, too, with younger comics where I experienced this in Atlanta a lot where you could tell some of these comics, it's the goal is just to be edgy or offensive. The goal is not to be funny. Like, here's my abortion joke. Here's my lesbian joke. Yeah, none of those are really good jokes, though. I'd rather hear a good joke about peanut butter than a shitty joke about something edgy.
I heard somebody go through this, saying there's stages of, like, you start comedy, and if you get laughs based on good jokes, and you get used to the reaction, well, you keep writing, and then a lot of people, myself included, and I still feel like you like the react, like getting a reaction out of the crowd is not the same as getting laughs, but it is knowing that people are paying attention to you. And so you go through this shock part, this shock stage of development where you're like, oh, everybody can't believe I just said that. I'm like, yeah, but is it funny? It doesn't mean you're a good comic. No. And you don't realize that at the moment. And hopefully you move on from it. Or learn how to make those shocking jokes also very funny.
Mm-hmm. Or original, too. Yeah. A lot of them have no originality. Like, yeah, every uncle in America has made that joke, shithead.
If it's just the dudes laughing, you know. Yeah, well, whatever. I mean, if you can make just dudes laugh if you want to, I don't care.
We got a text. Hey, fellas, longtime listener, first time texter. Two quick things. If you get a banh mi and dip that in some pho, it's kind of like a French dip version of a banh mi. It's fantastic.
Was that what we were talking about last time?
Were we?
Somebody just brought this up. What was it, us?
I don't remember that. Maybe we did. We talked so much shit. It's
I am farting so much right now.
I heard that. Way to go.
Did you?
I thought you had a stray dog walk in.
It just happened, and now I'm cracking him off the pleather. I was just talking to somebody about getting a side of just pho broth for the banh mi to dip.
I mean, that's genius. That sounds so good.
Good. Great minds think alike. Good text. Very good text.
I like a banh mi a lot. Sometimes I find the carrots and or cucumbers unnecessary.
Oh, I think you know, they're not bringing a brightness.
I mean, I like the crunch. Yeah, they don't bring a ton of flavor, but yeah, I get it.
Brightness,
little crunch.
Well, aren't they pickled? Aren't they normally kind of like tossed in vinegar or something? Maybe not pickled,
maybe.
But like dressed.
Yeah, hopefully. But yeah, I feel like I've gotten just some real dirty, unpeeled, unwashed carrots in my banh mi in the past, and it's been off-putting. But yeah, if you do it right. But yeah, I like the idea of dipping anything in some pho. You still fucking with pho? You still eat that a lot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not as much.
That used to be your go-to when we
was kind of, I found out about it, and I went overboard on it. Yeah, really overcranked it to that. And then I got a hot pot down the street from the house here, though.
Ooh, okay.
I like a hot pot. I kind of like that it seems unsafe.
Yeah, and then you might find some weird stuff floating in there.
Well, this place, you just pick out all your ingredients, but they're just in a cooler, like the produce section at the store, and everybody's using their tongs, touching different stuff, cross-contaminating. Yeah. I like riding the lightning, baby.
Yeah, kind of like a Mongolian barbecue place.
I go for the veggies, but I'm still looking like, oh, there's just there's just intestines. Like, it's all just in the case next to the vegetables. I'm like, I don't want it, but good luck to you if you want it. But it is also a very, I do love it. Like, it's real tasty.
Yeah.
It's not so much hot.
No, I love pho. But I think we talked about this before. I love pho, but if given the option, I'm going to go ramen every time. I feel like the broth is a little more complex.
It's a heartier meal.
Got another quick text. Hey, Dave. Hey, Kyle. Quick question. Whatever happened to the Skinwalker documentary that your friend Ryan Singer mentioned would be coming out? The one when he was in Florida a few years back and had a scary encounter walking back from the Sugar Shack. I believe he said Ed Brown was the guy who would be releasing the documentary. It seemed like it would have been interesting. I can't find it. Can't find anything on Google about it. Did Ryan ever follow up and say it got canned? No, the answer to that one is it's still in the works. He's working on it right now as far as editing it. But Ryan wanted me to share that he does have another documentary coming out very soon on Tubi called Friends in the Sky, The Investigation at Mutation Ranch. Ryan is a busy dude. He's always out. Like, he's the real deal when it comes to a lot of the boogie monster related stuff, a lot of the paranormal, supernatural stuff. He's got such a thirst and a passion for it.
Also, Friends in the Sky is a hell of a name for it.
Yeah, Friends in the Sky, The Investigation at Mutilation Ranch. He spent a bunch of time at a friend's ranch in Colorado, and I forgot the name of the friend, but that's what this documentary is about. This guy owns a ranch or a farm or something, and he's had numerous, we've talked about that before, but the cattle mutilation. He's had numerous cattle just show up completely mutilated, you know, no, like super clean surgical precision in some of these, wounds or whatnot. And Ryan has spent, I think he's been out there 3 or 4 times where he'll spend about a week at a time with this dude, and they'll just wander around his ranch and find dead cattle and shit.
Guess we're having steak again tonight.
But that initial, the Skinwalker documentary, what this caller was texter was referring to, I think we talked about this, and maybe Ryan even talked about it in an interview on the show. But a few years ago, he's in Florida and visiting some friends who also own some property down there that they've had all kind of crazy experiences. And it was one night late, Ryan is staying in this little kind of guest house, kind of in the back of the property. It's pretty secluded. And one night, right outside of his door, he just heard what he's convinced was a Sasquatch. Just some incredible scream from some unknown creature that it, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. I asked Ryan if I could talk about this. Mm-hmm. It sent Ryan to therapy. He went to therapy specifically from this incident. It was so traumatic and scary.
Well, you know what? Of all the things Ryan said to us, I'm just glad he found therapy. Oh, this was the story that sent him to therapy.
Yeah, that's the one.
He's my friend, and I hope he's well.
Ryan is a beautiful human being. Yeah. He's just got such a great spirit to him. And I wish I had half of his proactiveness in terms of, like I said, he's just got such a hunger for this stuff. And I'm into it too, obviously, but when I hang out with him, it's like, oh, you're like, I'm just an undergrad and you're working on your doctorate. Like, he's so deep into a lot of this stuff. And, but yeah, I mean, not to make not to make light of his story, but yeah, it really shook him. He called me the next day. I was on the road, and we talked like an hour. He's like, I know people think I'm crazy, and you know, he's got the whole shapeshifter story that
we've
talked
about.
Well,
like
he
says, he's like, I don't need you to believe me, but I need you to know that I believe me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, I got you, man.
Yeah, he's had some interesting encounters.
Yeah, you're not trying to put it on.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Skinwalker doc that he's working on is to be determined, but the cattle mutilation one should be out soon on Tubi. I'm not on Tubi yet. I see it on there on the apps.
Yeah.
The free stuff.
I don't know. I'm trying to downscale how much stuff I'm subscribing to.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see.
I think that's about it. Oh, anything else? I wanted to shout this out real quick. Pride Month. June is Pride Month. More power to you, Pride folks. Our LGBTQ plus community. I got a quick little story that involves one of my passions, baseball, with Pride. October 2nd, 1977. This is a fun fact. October 2nd, 1977, Dodgers outfielder Dusty Baker hits a home run. Dusty later went on to be a great manager. He's a Hall of Fame manager, but he hits a home run for the Dodgers.
He was a Cubs fella.
He was a Cubs guy as well. Played for the Giants, Cubs, Dodgers. Anyway, manager. Dusty Baker hits a he hits a home run.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah,
I'm interrupting because that was the one baseball fact. No, he's a manager. I'm sorry. Go on.
You are allowed to interrupt if you have a baseball fact.
For once in my life.
It's a rare occasion.
Hold on, Dave. I think I know a little something about baseball.
Speaking of baseball, I enjoyed trying to coach you through some of the basics of baseball when you watched a few innings with me over here, and you were surprised the concept of the ground rule double. Guy hit a ball in the outfield, it bounced and then went over, and you were surprised that wasn't a home run.
Yeah, let him have it.
Ground rule double. Anyway, Dusty Baker hits a home run October 2nd, 1977, as he rounds the bases and goes to home plate. The next batter, the guy who was on deck, a guy named Glenn Burke, he's just standing there and he wants to congratulate his teammate on hitting the home run. So Glenn just holds his hand up in the air with his palm exposed, and Dusty walks up to him and just slaps his hand with his open palm, and they don't think much of it. Well, guess what? A few minutes later, the same guy, Glenn Burke, he's the guy that initially did it. Now he's up to bat. He hits a home run, back-to-back home runs. And now when he circles the bases and goes back to the dugout, Dusty Baker tries to jokingly return the favor. He holds his hand up with the palm exposed. That guy slaps his hand, and boom, the high five was born. And what's this got to do with Pride Month? Well, Glenn Burke at the time was a closeted homosexual, and there was actually rumors. I think it was one of those kind of he's not out, but a lot of people knew about it, especially his teammates.
What year was this?
Apparently, this was 1977. At the time when this happened, do you know who Tommy Lasorda is?
Yeah.
He's a famous manager for the Dodgers.
Famous Weight Watchers endorser.
Yeah, Weight Watchers. Apparently, Glenn Burke was secretly dating Tommy Lasorda's son. And Lasorda kind of knew about it, and apparently
was
not too kind.
Lasorda dating him.
Yeah, it was Lasorda dating him.
All right, okay.
But anyway, a couple years later, Burke retires, and then he officially comes out as I surely wasn't the first gay baseball player, but one of the first to come out. And even though I don't think he came out while he was active, when he retired, he's like, yeah, I'm gay. But he invented the high five. How about that? One of those things, like, where did that come from? Well, that's where it came
from. Well, you just ruined high fives for a lot of repressed dudes.
Gross.
Also, I don't know when the last time I've seen somebody do a real up high high five.
Yeah, the really up high ones.
Like really
I was working on a premise a while back about how, as a sports fan, it's fun to watch, like, the evolution of celebrations. And, like, this is kind of a milestone. Well, there we go.
I'm sorry, dude. Lord. It's so much. It's so much.
Oh, my God.
I had soup and ice cream cone at like 1 in the morning when I got home last night.
Oh, my God.
And it's working so wonders on me. I'm sorry.
But it's funny to go back and watch like late 70s, early 80s stuff after this incident I'm talking about, like once the high five kind of got established, it still took a few decades for people to be able to do it and look cool. Like there was just a lot of like, it's just funny to see old athletes like do these kind of corny, uncoordinated celebrations, you know, where now every player's got swag and they're so fluid and cool. And, but back then it was just like, I don't know. What do? We slap hands. Okay.
Do you know the trick of looking at the elbow if somebody's trying to high five you?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I learned that. And I'm funny. Like, I would miss, I have no coordination whatsoever. Like for high fives, daps, all like I fuck it up every time. And somebody's like, look at the, if somebody's trying to just high five you, just look at the elbow. And it, I honestly, I was like, that's stupid. It worked. It worked for me. So happy about
it. I used to do a little inside joke. When someone would try to high five me, I would slap their forearm as if I missed, you know, like a real doofus.
I just grab their tits.
Physical comedy.
Can't do that anymore. Thanks, Obama.
Oh, boy. Kyle, where you at coming up? Where can we see you?
Oh, we are almost to summer hours, Dave. This weekend, 4th, 5th, and 6th of June, Tampa, Florida at Side Splitters.
There you go.
Independent club I did for the first time a couple years ago. Delightful. Had a very good time. Happy to be going back down there. Not what people
say. Don't stay in the condo. Are they putting you up at the condo?
No, I got a hotel. Condo's rough.
Okay, good. Good, yeah. The Tampa Side Splitters condo. It used to be rough 10 years ago.
Well, this is a new management. So I was playing this place, and I never knew much about it. It's a new management. Good stuff. Had a blast there last time. I'll be there with my pal Jake Silberman. And then Matt Bronger, which if you're not going to see me, go see my buddy Matt Bronger. He's in Fort Charlotte, somewhere around Fort Myers. He got roped into some sort of dinner theater thing. So go see Bronger struggle with doing a clean set at a dinner theater in Port Charlotte if you're not coming. Or come see us both in Miami. We're doing Miami, the Comedy Inn. People speak very highly about the Comedy Inn in Miami. There are tickets.
Is that the one we did together?
No, we did. I forget the name of the place we did.
That was a cool little spot.
It was. This is like a dedicated comedy room. I think it's very small, like 85 seats. There's some tickets left for the second show, not for the first show. Bother me on Instagram if you want a link for those. I don't. They're kind of like a private, like their ticket link goes out to their mailing list, and it usually sells out because how small it is. But I can get you that. And then I'll be in Comedy Key West, my buddy Tom Dustin.
Right.
My buddy Tom Dustin's club in Key West. I'm finally getting down there to check it out on Monday. Bronger and I will both be there on Monday, June 8th. And then June 9th, I'm just going to be in Key West for a day. And then I come home, and then we are moving to summer hours here at Kyle Kinane Industries. Well, I'll be in Wenatchee, Washington the weekend after, but that's a driving gig. That's regional.
Mm-hmm. Home field advantage.
Kind of, yeah. It's kind of just in the middle of nowhere there, so.
Well, good times, buddy.
Yeah. What about you, man? You got you cooking anything?
Yeah, I'm cooking all kinds of stuff. My weight loss journey took a hit this month with my newfound yogurt obsession. I got to get off the yogurt.
Oh, the full fat yogurt that I was too full to try. Yeah. I was thinking about that Italian food again the other day, by the way.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
It came back on me. Like, oh man, remember when you had that? It was that kind of meal, Dave.
Oh, thanks, man. I mean, seriously, that is my goal when I'm serving, you know, friends or family. Like you want to serve a memorable meal. You want people to remember it fondly. Like, oh yeah, that was good.
Well, I think it also had to do with, I think it was in reaction to me making some absolute bullshit for myself here. I was like, God, this sucks. Remember when Dave made food? Man, that was good. Your food sucks.
Well, that's why I could just tell. I was like, we could have just gone out and had a meal at a restaurant. But I was like, nah, I think Kyle needs someone to cook for him. He needs a home-cooked meal.
I appreciated that, man. That was great.
Oh, boy. But, yeah, I'm cooking up a bunch of stuff, but just trying to wean myself off the yogurt, you know. It's not the yogurt per se. It's the honey. I put too much honey in the yogurt, and it's delicious. But It's natural sugar, but it's still sugar. It's still caffeine.
It sure is.
I got to wean myself off of that. Only plug I really got, Dave's Record Room on Instagram. If you're not following me at Dave's Record Room on Instagram and you're into vinyl, please do so, because I'm selling off some of my surplus to make room for other records. I got to sell some of these old records to buy new records. But I'm moving units. So, yeah, Dave's Record Room. I drop a little batch, you know, once or twice a week. I'll drop 10 or 20 albums on there. And some of them been selling. But, again, I don't necessarily want to sell these. I kind of told Katie I'd make some room. So that being said, I don't have a lot of motivation to negotiate. So I'm not, it's not a everything must go situation. It's, I guess I'll sell it, but I'm not.
You're not excited about it.
Yeah, I'm not excited about it. I'm definitely not interested in negotiating downward, but who knows? You got to move some stuff, so I'm running out of space. But yeah, anyway, Dave's Record Room on Instagram. Holler at your boy. And Kyle's Grateful Dead playlist is available to the general public on Apple Music, Spotify, and YouTube Music. So three different platforms I've compiled. Just search Boogie Monster Dead. Boogie Monster Dead.
Is that now Noah put that same version of Scarlet Begonias on there where you're like, the intro's kind of annoying because they like doing some crowd control because it's a live cut. Is that considered the best version? And
yeah, kind of that whole album is kind of considered their best live album. A lot of deadheads will tell you that Cornell, what is it, 5977? I should know it, but that whole album is really just, you were talking about, I mean, they're a great example of someone who's like different versions of the same song, like so many different versions, but like, almost every version of some of their more popular songs that appear on that album. I think the sound quality is so damn good. Cornell 5877, Grateful Dead, Cornell University, 5877. That's the name of that album. But I love. If it's on that album, it's probably one of my favorite versions of what they do. Because like I said, just the sound quality and just kind of where they were at in that era of their career, late 70s. You know, they were just really smoking. It's a good album. Nice. But yeah, check out Boogie Monster Dead. Boogie Monster Dead. Just 10 tracks, just a starter kit, you know. Real deadheads might scoff at it like, "Oh, you're just playing the hits," but these are some of the songs that got me into the Dead, so I thought I'd share those with you and everybody else.
It's good jams, man. I'm actively changing.
it's fun to be a part of, buddy. It's fun to see you not that you need it to change, but any type of change could be fun.
Allow growth into your life, everybody.
There you go. Well, rock and roll, Hoochie Coo.
Yeah, dog.
We did it.
Let's let them go. Let's go have a nice summer day.
Yeah, I got to go watch some baseball. And yeah, we're about there. Did you do anything for Memorial Day? Anything fun?
Nothing
memorable.
What the hell? When was that? 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's a week.
No, I can't. No, because when did we record? No, so we recorded 2 weeks. This is where I'm all out of sorts.
It's confusing.
No, I went and saw. This is what I did. I went and saw. It's a bit. I don't want to do too many bits on the podcast, but it came out. Right before, I went and saw the Dwarves and Screeching Weasel, some old punk rock bands. And I was being an old punk rock. Everybody was old there. Bands were old. Crowd was old. And I was having some tequila, and I was in the pit. It wasn't even like crazy. It was people kind of just moving around being sweaty. Nobody was getting gnarly, but there's spilled drinks and everything, and I was drunk, and I fell, which, you know, if you fall, it's a pit. And too many people helped me up. man, I fell. I felt man. Like, oh, yeah, like this isn't. And it is the bit, but it's like the bit happened. I didn't write a bit. The bit happened.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh, this is a, let's go get him some water.
Sir, are you okay?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, if he's got fake hips, this is bad. If he's on his original hips, this is bad. So I did that, and then it was that weekend I was kind of a little lost weekend for me. It's kind of being a little rascal.
Good for you,
but nothing crazy.
Yeah.
What about you? What about you? You do anything?
Nah, we didn't do anything. I cooked some steaks. That's about it.
There you go.
Yeah. Watch a little baseball. Eat some steaks.
Chimichurri. What'd you do on there?
I was doing that. I think I talked about it last episode. The hanger steak. Hanger steak. Oh
yeah.
Man, marinated in some garlic and basil, a little olive oil. Oh my god, dude! Whenever you want to break edge again around me, I'll cook you a hanger steak, dude.
All right. Yeah, because steak is not the thing that drags me away usually.
Mm-hmm.
What's hanger steak in relation to like a strip steak? I remember strip steak being the kind that I like the most.
Yeah, it's different. It's more of I don't know exactly what part of the cow it comes from, but it's like tubular. It's like a long tubular thing, almost like eating half a snake. So it doesn't look like a traditional chop steak.
You're not winning me over.
Yeah, I know it's true. But
if you want to break edge, come over. I'll make you some tube steak.
I got you some tube steak.
No, can we boogie? Can we boogie with that tube steak?
Yeah, we get down.
Is that tube steak boogie or tube snake boogie?
ZZ Top. I think it's tube snake. Tube snake boogie. ZZ Top, yeah.
Yeah, they're a little more direct with their lasciviousness. With their lascivitude.
I still can't believe that Pearl Necklace was a radio hit.
That's a wild.
That was a radio hit. She won a Pearl Necklace.
Yeah, like, really? Like, dude. Maybe
she wants your semen.
Maybe nobody knew what it meant back then.
I guess not, because it was a classic rock staple.
I think
a pearl necklace.
I think it had to be explained to me.
Yeah, well, it's not one. You shouldn't just inherently know what the hell that means. It's definitely someone has to. Like, okay.
Yeah.
That's disgusting, but I get it.
Yeah, I'm glad it had to be explained to me, and it wasn't like, I get it. Fucking jizz, dude. Totally. It's gotta be jizz.
That's probably jizz, right?
Yeah.
If I don't know, I just assume.
If it's not, jizz. They're missing a huge opportunity for this to be a funny bit.
All right, buddy. Get the hell out of here. Go live.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Alright, we'll talk to you soon.
What the fuck was that? You fucking idiots! You're all fucking idiots and you fucking suck!
Okay, thank you.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.